Well, praise the Lord. Praise the Lord. Welcome to another evening with Zion's Trumpet. How's everybody doing this week out there in Pal Talk Land? Everybody doing good? Good, good, okay. I see Jenna Ray's here. How you doing, Jenna Ray? Welcome. Anybody have anything to share before we start? Anything on your heart? Well, we'll see what happens. Maybe after somebody shares, after we share, somebody has something to say. Well, it's been kind of a busy week for me. I didn't get a chance to do a whole lot, but this thing is still on my mind from last week, actually, about this religious freedom thing, because it really is important, our understanding of religious freedom, especially as it relates to Islam right now. So last week, we talked about religious liberty, and I said the Founding Fathers' view of liberty was very different from today's view. They distinguished between liberty and license. We do not. We think license is liberty. And the liberty they promoted was a constrained liberty based on virtue, morality, and self-control, all of which comes from the Bible. The liberty that today's deluded Americans propagate is a counterfeit liberty. It's based solely on the right to choose. That's what it's based on, the right to choose. Morality has nothing to do with it. No constraints, anything. Just your right to choose. That's what liberty is defined as. And that's why today, liberty has absolutely no kind of restraints whatsoever. It's everybody is free to do what they want, no matter how wicked or evil it is. And you try to restrain people from doing wickedness, they flip out and they say you're trying to create a dictatorship over them. Liberty, I said, was espoused by George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, and all the other Founding Fathers. That liberty could not be used as an excuse to violate the rights of others or engage in criminal activity or undermine American society or replace our form of government with some kind of tyranny. And that that's the case becomes obvious when you read what the Founding Fathers wrote about religious freedom, particularly Thomas Jefferson. I quoted something last week about what Jefferson said concerning religious liberty. He said, quote, "The declaration that religious faith shall be unpunished does not give impunity to criminal acts dedicated by religious error." He also says some other interesting things. Okay, this is Thomas Jefferson. He said, quote, "If anything passed in a religious meeting seditiously or contrary to the public peace, let it be punished in the same manner and in no other wise than if it had taken place in a fair or a market." In other words, he said, if there's something illegal going on in church, that's no difference if you're doing it illegal in the market, in the open, in public. And they're both punished equally. Seditious acts that are contrary to public peace, they should be punished the same, whether it's done in the church or it's done on the secular arena. Another one he said was, quote, he said, "It is time enough for the rightful purpose of civil government for its officers to interfere in the propagation of religious teachings when principles break out into overt acts against peace and good order." All right, so when your religious principles, your religious teachings, breaks out into acts that are against the peace and good order of society, then it's time for the government to step in and take control and stop it. Another quote from Jefferson goes like this. He says, quote, "Whatever is lawful in the Commonwealth or permitted to the subject in the ordinary way cannot be forbidden to him for religious uses. And whatsoever is prejudicial to the Commonwealth in their ordinary uses, and therefore prohibited by laws, ought not to be permitted to churches in their sacred rites. For instance, it is unlawful in the ordinary course of things or in a house to murder a child. It should not be permitted any sect than to sacrifice children. It is the ordinary lawful or temporary lawful to kill calves and lambs. They may be therefore be religiously sacrificed. But if the good of the state required a temporary suspension of killing lambs, as during a siege, sacrifices of them may then be rightfully suspended also. This is the true extent of toleration." All right, so he's saying, if you do something illegal like murder a child under the guise of your religious duty, that's no different than murdering a child under civil law. You're going to be held just as accountable. Okay, so there's limits, there's constraints on what people can do under the guise of religious liberty. Unfortunately, our current view of liberty, which is held by the majority of today's political leaders, church leaders, and citizens, it can be used as an excuse to violate the rights of others, to engage in criminal activity, to undermine American society, and to destroy our form of government. And see, I like quoting Thomas Jefferson because Jefferson has become the hero of today's sodomites. He's the man they quote to validate the radical separation of church and state agenda, and to prove that America was never a Christian nation, and to promote their twisted view of liberty so they can normalize sodomy and legalize gay marriage. And I enjoy reminding these perverts that Mr. Jefferson, if he were alive today, would not be defending their right to practice sodomy, would not be defending their right to instill terror in people who say anything bad about homosexuals and drag them into court, put them in jail and all that. He would not be on their side. Far from it. He would have them arrested, jailed, and castrated. Now, the difference between the religious freedom espoused by the founders of the United States and the freedoms being espoused today can be seen in Jefferson's statement that it's just as unlawful to sacrifice children under the guise of religion as it is to murder a child. See, the founding fathers would have provided absolutely no protection for people using religion as an excuse to murder or rape. Yet today's view of liberty promotes just that. It protects people who, under the guise of religion, commit honor killings, rape, and they murder anybody who convert from their religion. That our perverted idea of liberty right now protects them. And that fact alone should reveal that today's idea of liberty came straight from the pit of hell. And Mr. Jefferson wasn't the only one who was intolerant, totally intolerant, of harmful or criminal practices done in the name of religious freedom. John Adams, who was the leader of the fight against British colonial rule, he was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. He was a cousin of John Adams, who was another founding father who became the second president of the United States. This is what he had to say about religious freedom. He said, quote, "In regard to religion, mutual toleration in the different professions thereof is what all good and candid minds in all ages have ever practiced, and both by precept and example inculcated on mankind. And it is now generally agreed among Christians that this spirit of toleration, in the fullest extent consists with the being of civil society, is the chief characteristic mark of the church. Insomuch that Mr. Locke has asserted and proved beyond the possibility of contradiction on any solid ground that such toleration ought to be extended to all whose doctrines are not subversive on society. The only text which he thinks ought to be, and which by all wise laws are excluded from such toleration, that's freedom of religion, religious liberty, are those who teach doctrines subversive to the civil government under which they live." Again, here's another founding father saying there's a limit to your liberty. There's a limit to religious freedom to do what you can do under the guise of religion. You can't teach doctrines that are subversive to the civil government under whose protection you live. So when you read these documents and you read the letters of the people who founded the nation, there is no way to get around the historical fact that all of them viewed religious freedom the same way. Religious freedom, that is, the mutual toleration of different professions of faith, is to be extended to all whose doctrines are not subversive to society. It's to be extended to all who do not engage in criminal activities. See, the religious sects which are excluded from that toleration are those which teach doctrines of subversive to the government and are immoral and take away the rights of your neighbor. All right? Do you know every state had its own constitution before the federal constitution was ratified? Some of them had to redo their constitutions after the U.S. Constitution was made. A lot of states redid their constitution, but some of them are the same. But every state had their own constitution because America was originally just a confederation of states. And the states are responsible for everything. You know, they all give you the same exact view of the founding fathers regarding religious liberty. For instance, the Liberty Clause in Georgia's state constitution back in 1777, it said, quote, "All persons whatsoever shall have the free exercise of their religion, provided it be not repugnant to the peace and safety of the state." The Constitution of New York, 1777, same year, stated, quote, "The free exercise and enjoyment of religious profession and worship without discrimination or preference shall forever hereafter be allowed within this state to all mankind, provided that the liberty of conscience hereby granted shall not be so construed as to excuse acts of licentiousness or justify practices inconsistent with the peace or safety of this state." There was a thing called the Northwest Ordinance back then, and it was enacted around the same time as the drafting of the U.S. Constitution. It was reenacted by the first Congress. And what it was a Bill of Rights for all the territory that would become today's Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, and part of Minnesota. That was a big open territory. And they were going to break up these states. But there was a constitution already drawn up before the states were made. And they would have to fulfill and live by these rules if they want to become part of the United States. And the first article in that bill, the Northwest Ordinance, says, quote, "No person demeaning himself in a peaceable and orderly manner shall ever be molested on account of his mode of worship or religious sentiments in the said territory." Well, that peaceable and orderly manner excludes rape, murder, taking away the rights of others, right? Again and again, you see these restraints put on the concept of religious liberty. Religious liberty is not licensed to just do anything, including evil. By 1789, every state in the Union but Connecticut had incorporated some kind of religious liberty clause in their constitutions. But along with that liberty came responsibility. Along with that liberty came moral and civil limitations and constraints. None of those constitutions gave the citizens of those states the liberty to rape, murder, or otherwise injure fellow citizens under the pretense of freedom of worship. Okay, nobody was free to practice acts of licentiousness or deny their fellow citizens their right to their own religious freedom. Just a few more examples is New Hampshire and Maryland at that time, 776 and 1784. The one says, New Hampshire Constitution said, regarding religion, it says, "Every individual has a natural and unalienable right to worship God according to the dictates of his own conscience and reason, and no subject shall be hurt, molested, or restrained in his person, liberty, or estate for worshiping God in the manner and season most agreeable to the dictates of his own conscience, provided he doth not disturb the public peace or disturb others in their religious worship." Okay, no limitation. Maryland, the Maryland Constitution says, quote, "No person ought to by any law be molested in his person or estate or account of his religious persuasion or profession or for his religious practices unless, under the color of religion, any man shall disturb the good order, peace, or safety of the state, or shall infringe the laws of morality others in their natural, civil, or religious rights." Okay, and this is the case with every state. Every state had a constitution guaranteeing civil and religious liberty with restraints, with limitations. Just a side note here. Is it logical or is it reasonable now to think that the intolerance of criminal behavior under the guise of religious freedom, which was held by virtually all the founding fathers and all the individual states, is it logical or reasonable to think that all those religious principles, all that intolerance, would suddenly vanish when it came time to draft and ratify the federal constitution, the U.S. Constitution? In other words, is it logical to assume that the same men who drafted those individual state constitutions, which put specific limits on what could and could not be done in the name of religious freedom, that those same men would then turn around and draft or support the U.S. Constitution, the federal constitution, that promoted just the opposite? I mean, isn't it unreasonable to think that the same men who refused to tolerate criminal behavior and immorality under the guise of religious liberty, that they would suddenly change their minds, turn around and draft and sign a federal constitution that protects criminal behavior and immorality in the name of religious liberty? That's not logical. It's not reasonable to think that. See, the truth is, the limitations on religious liberty that were stipulated in the freedom clauses of all these states, they're assumed in the freedom clause of the U.S. Constitution. If they weren't assumed, then none of the men who drafted the state constitutions would have had anything to do with, they wouldn't have drafted it, or they wouldn't have voted for the U.S. Constitution. So when you read the U.S. Constitution, you have to have all this background, what the fathers believed, founding fathers believed, what all these states put in their constitutions. All of them said we have an inalienable right under God to worship God according to our dictates of our conscience. However, that does not mean we can go out and rape and murder in the name of serving God. Okay? Now, how can anybody in their right mind look at the mountain of historical writings and documents of the nation's founders regarding what religious liberty is and conclude that the founding fathers would have tolerated gross immorality like pedophilia or rape or murder as long as it's done in the name of religion? That's insane to think that. How can any sane mind read what they said about the individual's duty to his country or his responsibility to behave in a manner that doesn't threaten the order of the government or overthrow the government, and then walk away thinking that people had the right to plan to overthrow the republic. What kind of insanity makes us think that civil and religious liberty protects people or groups who are plotting to destroy our Constitution, overthrow the republic, or install a tyrannical religious system on us in the name of liberty? That's insane. Yet that's exactly what's happening right now. Exactly. See, today, Muslim leaders are openly proclaiming that eventually Sharia law will be the law of this land. For a while, they were saying it just among themselves, inside their mosques, inside their little conventions. But now they're saying it openly. They're so brazen, and they see that America is so weak, they know they're going to win. So they don't care. They come right out and say it now. I'll give you just a few examples of how these Muslims openly and brazenly proclaim their intentions. Okay? Ibrahim Hooper of CARE said this. He said, "I wouldn't want to create the impression that I wouldn't like the government of the United States to be an Islamic country someday in the future." Ihsan Bagbi, also of CARE. CARE is a Council of American Islamic Relations. He says, "Ultimately, we Muslims can never be full citizens of this country because there is no way we can be fully committed to the institutions and ideologies of this country." Okay, Omar Ahmad, another leader of CARE. He says, "Islam isn't in America to be equal to any other faith, but to become dominant. The Quran, the Muslim book of scripture, should be the highest authority in America, and Islam the only accepted religion on earth." Amir Abdul Malik Ali, an Oakland imam, Oakland, California imam. He said, quote, "We must implement Islam as a totality in which Allah controls every place, the home, the classroom, the science lab, the halls of Congress." Siraj Wata, whatever his name is, I can't even read it. He's a Brooklyn imam. He said, "In time, this so-called democracy will crumble and there will be nothing. And the only thing left will be Islam." Imam Zahid Shakir, former Muslim chaplain at Yale University. He says, quote, "Muslims cannot accept the legitimacy of the existing American order, since it is against the orders and ordinance of Allah." Abu Bakr, an Islamic cleric in Australia, a very famous man. He said, quote, "I am telling you that my religion doesn't tolerate other religions. It doesn't tolerate. The only one law which needs to spread, it can be here or anywhere else, has to be Islam." Now, anyone with a sound mind, after reading these kinds of statements, would understand that at the very least, there are a lot of Muslim clerics and many Muslim people who follow those clerics who want Sharia to be the law of the land. I mean, it's obvious that many of them are committed to the destruction of our form of government, and they're working night and day to bring about that destruction. And they will not be satisfied until every last one of us is living under Sharia law, I guarantee you. Now, the fact that leftists and socialists ignore the obvious, the fact that they mock anyone who takes the words of these people seriously, and the fact that they're continuing calling people like me fear-mongers, xenophobes, bigots, racists, etc., reveals their true mental state. They are quite literally insane. Whatever mind they may have had at one time has been totally destroyed by political correctness. And unfortunately, even those who see what's happening, even the supposedly conservatives who are trying to stop this Islamization of America, they can't produce a sound argument for the only possible solution, because the only possible solution is to outlaw Islam. Either you change the whole religion and do away with about half its practices, half its cultural accoutrements, or else he has to outlaw it, and anybody tries to practice it, deport him. That's the only answer to what the problem is in this country with Islam. And nobody can produce a sound argument for that, the only possible solution, which is the outlaw of Islam, because they have accepted today's perverted, satanic definition of what freedom and liberty is. I'll just give you one example of many I could provide. There's a woman named Janet Levy. She's a conservative. She's a prolific writer on Islam, against Islam, and pro-national security. She wrote an article a while back, and the title of it was called De Facto Sharia Law in America. Okay, she's warning people. And this is what she says in one part of it. She says, quote, "Our uniquely American virtues of tolerance and freedom have worked against us to produce intolerance and oppression. This has led to a stealth introduction of Sharia law and a climate in which criticism of Muhammad or Islam are no longer possible without serious repercussions." Now, that may sound good, But I want to tell you, it's tolerance of sedition and freedom to practice criminal behavior under the guise of religion are not American virtues. I'm sorry, Miss Levy. Your heart's in the right place, but your mind is uninformed. They are not the American virtues that Washington and Jefferson, all those leaders, left us. Washington and Jefferson and Franklin and even the heretic Thomas Paine would never have permitted a wicked and criminal enterprise like Islam to gain a foothold in America. They would have never sat by silently like our gutless leaders do today and let a group of people, civil or religious, openly plot the destruction of the Republic and not do anything. They would never sat by silently while depraved Muslim animals rape and murder in the name of Allah with impunity. Our founders would never have allowed the following situations to occur. This is just a small sampling, okay? They would never let this stuff go on. They would have stopped it. A federal judge refuses a protection order to a Muslim wife who's been repeatedly raped by her husband because such abuse, rape, is allowed under Sharia law. So she asked for a restraining order, and he wouldn't give it to her because under Sharia, she has no right to do that. A fatwa, that's a death order, is put out on an American cartoon artist because she calls for an Everybody Draw Muhammad Day. A Sharia-compliant investment company, a fund in America, is camouflaged as a charity and funnels more than $12 million to Hamas suicide bombers. A public debate among American politicians goes on. It takes place over whether or not Sharia law can coexist with the Judeo-Christian foundations of America, jurisprudence, and the U.S. Constitution. A pro-Muslim Brotherhood group continually blocks efforts to keep Sharia law out of the U.S. courtrooms. The practice of female genital mutilation, preteen forced marriages, and polygamy are openly practiced and go unchallenged by law officials or American courts. A California elementary school revises its schedule specifically for Muslim kids, adding a 15-minute recess after lunch so they can go pray in a separate room. That same elementary school also stops all pork. They get rid of all pork to remove from the menu to accommodate their religion. Elementary schools across America hold a special day to honor Islam. The children are forced to dress like Muslims and learn Islamic culture and prayers. A public university spends $25,000 to install Muslim foot washing stations on its campus. Four American Christians are illegally arrested and thrown in jail because they try to discuss religion with Muslims in an Islamic ghetto or enclave known as Dearbornstein. That's Dearborn, Michigan. Those kinds of things would never be allowed by the Founding Fathers. There's no way. They would not have tolerated that for 1 minute. There's another one. An anti-American radical Asian liberal has just been put on the bench. Chief Justice, okay? Her name was Elena Kagan. Washington would never allow that because she favors the introduction of Sharia into our own legal system. Now, anyone who's ever done a little research on that woman and her background, it's very easy to come up with what she stands for. It's all over the place. You know, she's a pro-homosexual, pro-Sharia person. There's an article on the Canadian Free Press website exposing her past connections with pro-Sharia people and institutions and warning about her unconstitutional views. Nobody paying attention. They still voted for her. Democrats and Republicans voted for her. As a state solicitor general under Obama, she was an activist. And that shows she'll be an activist judge, which encourages integration of Sharia law into American law. This woman, while she was dean of the Harvard Law School, she kicked the American military recruiters off the campus, but welcomed Muslim recruiters who were looking for top-notch legal talent to help them implement Sharia-compliant financing. She also dropped the required course on Harvard Law School on constitutional law and replaced it with a required course on international law. So now you can graduate from Harvard Law School without ever studying our own constitution or our own constitutional law. This is just a sample of what's going on in the country. I can put pages and pages down, okay? Just a sample. But according to all these brain-dead liberals, all these politically correct zombies, none of these things mean anything. There's nothing to worry about. A good example that's kind of an insane liberalism is can be seen when you talk about the Ground Zero Mosque. You all know about the Ground Zero Mosque controversy in New York. These Arabs want to build a mosque where, right beside where the planes put those two buildings down. And anyone who knows anything about Islam knows that Muslims always seek to build mosques on territory they have just conquered. Now, the fact that the supposed moderate Muslim, which is not a moderate, You get his speeches in Arabic. He's just like any other Muslim terrorist. It's the same thing. He's not a moderate. He's only moderate for us English speakers. But this guy's supposed to be moderate. He wants to build a Muslim community center, which is going to double as a mosque, very close to Twin Towers. That's a sign that he and Muslims think they achieved a great victory through that terrorist attack. But again, if you try and tell these liberal zombies this is what's going on, you know, they don't see anything wrong with building a mosque at Ground Zero. Because, you know, hey, religious liberty. An editorial in the New York Daily News, when this first broke out, demonstrates this kind of blindness, okay? Goes through this whole article about the Ground Zero Mosque. The last paragraph, this editorial, whoever it was, doesn't set their name, it's just that editorial, didn't say their name. They wrote, led to the facility being dubbed Ground Zero Mosque, a term that generated unfortunate passions. She says, in fact, the Cordoba House, which is, that was the official name of that mosque, is two blocks away from the Twin Towers. Had it been closer, the point would be the same. All religions have equal rights. It doesn't matter where the Ground Zero Mosque is, whether it's right on that site, two blocks away from that site. The point is, all religions have equal rights. And that's what every American believes. And I say, excuse me, but all religions do not have equal rights. The writer of that article need to learn the true history of America. Because George Washington would never have tolerated child molestation, rape, and murder in the name of practicing your religion. Thomas Jefferson would never have tolerated the kind of immoral and criminal behavior that filthy Quran routinely calls for. I guarantee you, those who would try to practice Islam the way they're doing it today, back in the days of the revolution, they would not have been coddled and tolerated. There was no political correctness back then. They would have been arrested and thrown in jail. Then they would have been tried before a court of law, and they'd have been either hung or castrated. And those who weren't hung, they would have been unceremoniously deported. And sent them right back to where they came from. But it's just the opposite today. Everybody's bound down to Islam because of religious toleration, because all religions are created equal, all that kind of stuff, right? That's a counterfeit, people. Wherever you have a majority of Muslims, you're going to have Sharia law being implemented. And wherever Sharia is implemented, there's going to be religious persecution of non-Muslims, murder, honor killings, female genital mutilation, widespread rape, and all kinds of wicked and criminal behavior. Sharia produces everything the founding fathers despised and refused to tolerate. Yet the majority of Americans have no problem tolerating Islam because they've literally been brainwashed by nonstop, politically correct propaganda, which claims that one, all religions have equal rights under the United States Constitution, which is a lie, and two, that most Muslims in America are peace-loving people who have no wish to replace our form of government with Sharia, which is another lie. Most of them do. The fact is, most Americans are so thoroughly brainwashed, they no longer even have the capacity to understand the truth. When you tell them Islam is the antithesis of everything the Founding Fathers stood for, they just stare at you like zombies because they have no idea what the Founding Fathers actually taught regarding religious freedom, and they can't believe Islam is a danger to the nation. See, the vast majority of today's Americans have been given over to a strong delusion because of the rebellion against God. And the delusion was manifested this past week as millions and millions of Americans celebrated the death of Osama bin Laden. All over this country, newspapers report how Americans were in the streets and holding celebrations, and they were, you know, celebrating the dedication and supposed determination of the White House in bringing these terrorists to justice. And they're boasting that nobody can take America down. You know, we're going to win the war on terror. We're going to overcome. That's all deception. While these people are celebrating the death of one single terrorist and boasting about how their nation is invincible, Islam is becoming a specially protected religion even now. It's already being exalted above all other religions in this country. It's being taught in our schools and our universities, and it's fast becoming the law of the land. You know, there's been at least 17 instances in 11 states where Sharia has been implemented instead of and contrary to constitutional law. Now, fortunately, some states have begun to see the writing on the wall, and they're trying to pass laws which will prohibit the implementation of Sharia in their states. Okay, and I have a little map here included in this notes, which shows which states have outlawed or tried but failed to outlaw Sharia, and which ones are in the process of trying to outlaw it. In an address to the American Enterprise Institute for Public Policy Research last year, Newt Gingrich warned that Sharia is advancing in America. He said, quote, its principles and punishments are totally abhorrent to the Western world. And then it called for a federal law that, quote, says no court anywhere in the United States and under any circumstances allowed to consider Sharia as a replacement for American law. Of course, you know, no such federal law is going to ever be passed because the government of the United States has been completely and totally infiltrated by Muslim Brotherhood stooges and is now under the control of pro-Sharia judges and political leaders. There's no way they're going to pass a federal law against Sharia. Absolutely not. And not only will the federal government never pass an anti-Sharia law, it's going to actively fight against all such laws that are passed, and it will try to overturn those laws. And if that's the case, it can already be seen by the fact that in a referendum back in November 2010, the people of Oklahoma, in a 70-30% vote, chose to amend their state constitution to make court decisions based on Sharia illegal. And you know, immediately after that vote was taken, a federal district judge, who was born and raised in an African country, of which over 50% were Muslims, imposed a temporary restraining order on that election results, and she stopped the board from certifying that amendment. And through a legal process that involved care, the thing was eventually shot down. It was never ratified, and the whole thing died. Just recently, the legislature scheduled a vote on a similar bill in Missouri. And the Muslims in St. Louis started crying, persecution, Islamophobes. And very soon, within a day or two, the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Missouri was standing in front of them in their little Islamic center, strongly hinting that if an anti-Sharia bill is passed, it would be overturned by federal courts. This guy's name is Mr. Callahan. This is what he said. He said the Department of Justice has a good history of challenging laws passed by state legislatures. If some laws are passed, I think you will see the challenge by the federal government on the constitutionality of them. You got the government, from the president right on down, the federal government, it's going to overturn any state eventually that passes an anti-Sharia law. If you don't think that's dangerous, you're nuts. It doesn't take a PhD to understand what's happening in America or how Muslims take control of the nation. See, because we've had 10 years or 15 years to see how they're taking over Europe. There's a very definite pattern that they use. It's like a football playbook. And once you learn the pattern of the playbook, you can easily discern what they're doing, and you can see how far down the road the demitude your particular nation is. Islamization begins when there's a sufficient number of Muslims in a country to agitate for their own particular religious privileges, many of which are criminal, many of which are illegal, many of which are immoral, disgusting, and demonic. And the more politically correct and tolerant and culturally diverse the host country is, the host society is, the quicker it's going to agree to these Muslim demands. And from there on, Muslim domination progresses pretty quickly. Here's how it works. As long as the Muslim population remains around or under 2% in any given country, they'll be regarded as a peace-loving minority because they work quietly within the religious structure, within the civil structure, within the legal structure to do their little thing. So they're viewed as a peace-loving minority. And that's the case in the United States, Australia, Canada, China, Italy, and Norway right now, who each have Muslim populations under 2%. At 2% to 5%, they begin proselytizing from other ethnic minorities, from disaffected groups, often within the jails and street gangs. And that's happening right now in Denmark, Germany, United Kingdom, Spain, and Thailand. From 5% on, they exercise an inordinate influence in proportion to their percentage of the population. For example, they'll start pushing the introduction of halal meat that's claimed by Islamic standards, halal food. And when they do that, they secure jobs for Muslims to create that food. They'll increase pressure on supermarket chains to feature halal foods on their shelves, and if they don't, they'll have threats. And that's occurring in countries like France, Philippines, Sweden, Switzerland, Netherlands, and where the population is over 5%. At that point, they're going to work to get the ruling government to allow them to rule themselves within their ghettos. See, first they start moving to a city, and then the city becomes bigger and bigger and bigger, and finally got a ghetto or an enclave that's all Muslim. And then non-Muslims become verboten, can't even enter there. They start living according to Sharia, and they petition the government to let them rule themselves in these little ghettos. But of course, the ultimate goal is to establish Sharia over the whole host nation and eventually the entire world. Well, when they reach 10% of the population, that's when they start increasing in lawlessness, running down the streets, putting cars on fire as a means of complaint about their supposed downtrodden conditions. Like in Paris last year, you've seen they're already burning cars. So at that point, any non-Muslim action which offends them, which offends Islam, it results in uprisings and threats and riots and all kind of stuff, like you see in Amsterdam. And that going on right now in Guyana and India and Israel and Kenya and Russia. After reaching 20%, the nation can expect rioting and jihad militias to be formed, sporadic killings, and the burning of Christian churches and Jewish synagogues. That's going on in Ethiopia right now, where it's 32.8%. At 40%, nations experience widespread massacres and chronic terror attacks, ongoing terror attacks all the time, every day, ongoing militia warfare, like in Bosnia, Chad, and Lebanon. At 60%, nations experience unfettered persecution of non-believers of all their religions, including non-conforming Muslims. They experience ethnic cleansing, which is genocide, and the use of Sharia as a weapon. And they also experience the jizya, that's the tax placed on infidels. And that's what's going on in Albania, Malaysia, Qatar, and Sudan right now. At 80%, you can expect daily humiliation, intimidation of non-Muslims, violent jihad, state-run ethnic cleansing, and genocide as the nations seek to drive out the infidels and move towards a 100% Muslim Islamic state, such has been experienced in some ways going on in places like Bangladesh, Egypt, Gaza, Indonesia, Iran, Iraq, Jordan, Morocco, Pakistan, Syria, Tajikistan, Turkey. At 100%, you've got Dar al-Salam, which is called the House of Peace, because there's no more non-Muslims, there's no more, you know, nothing to be done. Everything's totally Quranic, totally Islamic. And this is supposed to be the House of Peace, because everybody's a Muslim, everybody's submitting, the madrasas are the only schools in the nation, the Qurans are anything being taught, and that's what you got in Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, Somalia, and Yemen. Unfortunately, even in these places which have achieved 100% Islamic states, you're still going to have problems, no peace, see, because the most radical Muslims in that state eventually start murdering the less radical Muslims, even though they're all Muslims. If you see my video up there on my video page that I put up there, that black pastor, Pastor Manning, he interviewed a guy named Avi Lipkin, and Avi said in an interview, he said, you know, the God of Islam is a God of hate. Islam's God hates everyone, even the Muslims. So the Muslims will continue to kill non-Muslims until there's no more non-Muslims left. Then they're going to turn on each other and begin to kill each other until there's not any of them left either. The God of Islam hates everybody. He's going to kill everybody in the end. Now here in America, we're already beginning to see Muslim enclaves, Muslim ghettos, like they have in France. Dearborn, Michigan is just one example, but there's others. And in these enclaves or Muslim ghettos, they soon become 100% Muslim, and the people live according to Sharia, and it becomes like France eventually. In France, the national police don't even try to enter those ghettos. There's no national courts there. There's no national schools. Everything's Muslim. Now, it's a perfect way to keep Muslim children, Muslim young people, from integrating to the surrounding non-Muslim community. The children attend local madrasas. They learn only the Quran. They associate only with Muslims. And if they associate with infidels, they get punished by being killed. And there's entire regions in these European countries. They're now completely under the authority of local Muslim leaders who totally ignore national laws, not subject anymore to the national laws, and everybody's scared to death to go in and try and do anything about it.